This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Shall we begin?
Expecto Patronum!
He brought back!
So you want me to tell you the story of my life?
Like I said, that's what I do. I interview people. I'm a collector of lives. You seem very interesting. So, what do you do?
I'm a vampire.
That's something I haven't heard before.
You really believe this, don't you, that you're a vampire?
I'm flesh and blood, but not human. I haven't been human for 200 years. I am born. I grew up. Or shall we begin when I was born to darkness, as I call it?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Sharmila, and Arvin. Today, we've got a very special throwback. I think one of us is going to be deeply unhinged, actually. It will become clear who it is as time goes on. But we've got a very vampire-heavy week, actually, because we're going to be reviewing Morbius tomorrow. And today, we thought, when better to throw it back to 1994, an interview with the vampire.
Firstly, I resent these accusations.
You didn't have to out yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, because clearly Arvin's now going to geek out about Interview with the Vampire, right? Look, I just want to start off by saying Interview with the Vampire has a lot of flaws. It's by no means the perfect film. But having rewatched it for the first time in about 15 years, I think it might just be the perfect vampire movie. And I don't mean that in a like Blade or Dracula kind of way. I just mean that all of those cheesy OTT nonsense that you want from a vampire film, this one ticks every box.
It's also so dark and twisted, which I didn't expect. So
more than you realize.
More than you realize. So I realized this time around that I've never actually seen this movie in full, only in bits and pieces, clips on YouTube, and also how heavily censored it was on TV, like way back whenever I saw it. And I was surprised. Like, I was honestly shocked at how dark it is, how morbid the movie is, how twisted a lot of the scenes are, but also how beautiful it is, like, as a film. Like, the cinematography is so nice. But yeah, I did not expect this movie to be more dark than campy. I expected campier than darker, from what I remember, but not the case.
So the story of Interview with the Vampire is that there is an interview with a vampire that's being conducted that serves as the frame for the whole thing. But really, it's about the intergenerational adventures of a drip in the form of Brad Pitt's Louis, who was turned and became the companion of Tom Cruise's Lestat. And then over time, their philosophical differences became clear because one wanted to party and have fun and the other one wanted to mope. And that's pretty much it, right? That sets us up for the whole film. And I don't mean to undermine all the things we've just said about it being dark and twisty, because it is all those things. But it is also very much about the fundamental, I guess, different approaches you can take to being a vampire and the conflict that arises from that.
Louis, i.e. Brad Pitt, is just lucky that Brad Pitt in the 90s was that beautiful, honestly. Mm. Because if he didn't look the way he looks, and I don't mean this in a superficial, he's so hot kind of way, which of course he is. He was a heartthrob then. But the beauty of Louis is actually a really important part of the story. Everyone constantly talks about how beautiful he is. People are attracted to him because of how beautiful he is. Despite the fact that, as you said, Lynn, he's actually really blah. He gets the gift of immortality out of choice and
the
then just spends,
gift.
Yes, and then spends centuries just moping and complaining about it.
Why? To anyone who will listen.
Yes, including a reporter who doesn't know why he's there. And then also persists in, I don't know, making a child into a vampire. Like, none of these things actually make sense. But Brad Pitt is actually really watchable in this. I think what works in this movie is the fact that it really understands what gothic horror is. It leans into being completely over the top. It leans into all of the darkness. It leans into those tropes, right? The mournful hero, the crazy, bloodthirsty, enigmatic, charismatic anti-hero, and all of it just works. And I think I really miss these kinds of films. I miss the fact that people took these kinds of risks.
So that was one of my main conflicts watching this, because like even looking at it, you know it's a beautiful film. Like it's so well done and there's so much care put into it, and the set pieces are nice, the cinematography is nice. But at the same time, it's such trash. Like it's such a trashy sort of book you'd find in the bargain bin of a bookshop, like, you know, like 10, 15 years ago. You know what I mean, right? Mm. So even the way they dress, even the way they look, they would be like on the covers of those books. They're trashy novels. And I was like, so is this movie going for trash, or is this movie going for quality? Is it going for, you know, I want to be like an Academy Award nominee or Academy Award winning sort of film? Because it is like heavily, it has a cult following, and it's very, very famous. It's one of the pillar vampire movies.
I'm not the president of the fan club or anything.
Sure, sure. But that flip-flopping, that sort of fluid nature of the movie, like sometimes it's serious, sometimes it's not. For me, it wasn't a problem, but I was constantly like, oh, what is this movie trying to be exactly? Or does it not want to be anything at the end of the day?
I think it's an adaptation of that trashy spirit that you were talking about, where the books themselves kind of acknowledge that they're a little bit, what's the word I'm looking for? Juicy, overripe. You know, there are all these qualities to the books themselves. And I think that it's translated in the film, because with the visuals that we're talking about that are beautiful are also very excessive. You know, the scene in which Lestat turns Louis is crazy. That's like 5 minutes of two men floating around in the air and, you know, just kind of slow motion, all sorts of things happening.
The wire work is just the worst.
It's horrid. But, you know, it's there. And a lot of other scenes, pivotal scenes in the movie, are like that. They take that amount of time. They take up that amount of space. And so I think that the movie, part of why it's worked all these years is because it knows what it is. And everybody in it knows what it is, which is more than we can say for some other films that we'll be talking about this week. But I think everyone knows what it is that they're doing. I mean, we haven't mentioned yet enough about Tom Cruise or Kirsten Dunst, who are the other two members of this sort of very, this toxic family that happens in the middle of the film. But everyone's kind of pitching their performance just nice. It's very melodramatic. It's very bitey and snipey. Sorry, it's very bitey and snipey and all these different things. And I think all of it fits perfectly into the very hyperbolic feel of the movie.
I'm glad that you mentioned Tom Cruise, because really, I think that while I don't know if people know this kinds of cinematic like gossip or history, but famously, Anne Rice, who wrote the novels, mounted a hate campaign
yes.
against him being cast in the film, right? And then when she saw him in the movie, took out an ad in newspapers apologizing and now endorsing him in the role. And when you watch the film, you actually understand that. And this was Tom Cruise post like Top Gun, right? Mm. He was a leading man deciding to do this very dark, weird role. He totally brings it. And he finds these like weird humor in different scenes. There's this part where Louis just like in a fit of rage burns down the place they live in. And Tom Cruise comes in and essentially does the equivalent of throwing his hands up in the air like, oh my God, Louis, now we have to move. I love it. I love that he understands that that's what this film requires. I also genuinely think that the movie leans into the horror and the darkness in a way that I really like. The other thing I realized was that back then, this kind of bloodiness, I think in the first half an hour of the scene, there's just some really gross, disturbing scenes that I don't know if you would expect in a movie that you watched on RTM2 at one point. And watching it now kind of makes me think of, I don't know, who decided to put this on screen and why did they think it would work?
Also, the fact that Tom Cruise is the other in this movie, like he's the other one. Because if, like, correct me if I'm wrong, but Brad Pitt wasn't like a huge draw when this movie was made, right? So this was one of the things that propelled him to superstardom and made Brad Pitt's name Brad Pitt. But to actually cast Tom Cruise, who was like riding that wave, like way back when he was the blockbuster star, and then make him sort of the side character to Brad Pitt's character, that was a choice, because he could have been in the lead role. He could have been Louis. And the choice to put both these guys together, in hindsight, it works. You're looking at it like, wow, that's like Brad Pitt and Tom Cruise. But back then, it's a chance. Like, they had to take that shot and hope that Brad Pitt could pull this off with a Tom Cruise.
It's a weird one. I mean, I'm glad that we're throwing back to it, because now we have a very specific vantage point, because, you know, Brad Pitt, Tom Cruise, very specific movie hunks of the 90s and 80s, actually, in the case of Tom Cruise. But then there's also Antonio Banderas, who's in this film for like a hot second, and is also, again, meeting the assignment, knowing exactly how he's supposed to be. And, you know, he really is that particular European vampire, shall we say. And so, you know, you've got your Antonio Banderas. And when you look back, you're like, what was this? Was this movie created by Playgirl? You know, because it really is these very famous, very heart-throbby actors at a very specific moment in time. And I can't think of an equivalent of it now, actually. I mean, never mind the story itself, but even the casting. What's the word I'm looking for? That thing where everything comes together? You know, that feeling, mm-hmm. kismet. That casting kismet that was the three of them being in one film at this particular point of fame. I can't think of a comparison.
No, you're right. And it doesn't happen very often, right? Because usually three up-and-coming or big stars committing to such a weird film doesn't happen very much. People make things by committee these days. Agents get involved. This is not the right role for you. So I do think that that kind of stuff doesn't happen. And Kirsten Dunst then playing, you know, being this child star.
She's amazing.
Isn't she? Mm. She was nominated for a Golden Globe for this role. And when you watch it, you're like, oh my God, she's so good. She essentially is literally stuck playing a child that ages a few decades. And she actually brings it, right? The makeup helps, the costuming helps, but her face, her eyes, even when I was young, she creeped me out. Watching her now again, she creeped me out so much because she looks like a child vampire.
I think the I like how the OTT-ness of the performance corresponds with the length of their hair. So if you think about it, like the longer the hair, the more OTT the performance is. I blame this movie for Twilight because I think that if this movie didn't come out, then all the other movies that came out after wouldn't have had to sort of live up to Tom Cruise and Brad Pitt. Because everyone's tried that. Like every single vampire that's been cast after this movie has tried to be either Brad Pitt or Tom Cruise in the way they look, the way they dress, the way they move. And that's why we have things like Twilight. I mean, that's just like a personal theory, but it makes sense, right?
I'm going to save my thoughts on Twilight for the supercut. I mean, I agree, but I also feel like there's stuff to say about that, but maybe not today. We're talking today, of course, about Interview with the Vampire, the first of our vampire heavy week. Have you seen it recently? Do you like it? WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio.
Because freedom matters. BFM 89.9.
What you are? A vampire gone insane that pollutes its own bed.
And if I cut my hair again?
It will grow back again.
But it wasn't always so. I had a mother once, and Louis, he had a wife. He was mortal, the same as she, and so was I.
Claudia!
You made us what we are, didn't you?
Stop her, Louis.
Did you do it to me?
Hello, everybody. You are listening to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Shyamalan, Arvin. And together we are throwing back to 1994, an Interview with the Vampire. So I wanted to start this thing off with this side of things off with a small diss, not of the film, but of the story, which is to say, if you were as old as Louis is at the start of this film, do you think you would have come up with better solutions? Like, I just think that his problem solving skills never improve. And the story doesn't help that. You know, fundamentally, his way of getting out of every situation is one way, which he just repeats over hundreds of years.
Louis is just, you know, when you watch a film or read a book and a character just never progresses, like he's the same person that you met at the start until the end, they're the same annoying person. Like Louis really is that. And
I mean, he is undead.
Yes, but does undead mean non-evolving? I mean, Lestat evolved. He learned to love.
Claudia evolved. So this is my thing. You know, it came to mind. I wasn't going to say it until we started talking about Claudia. And the fact that Kirsten Dunst was so charismatic and magnetic in that role, but also because the character allowed her to have desires, allowed her to have different ways and means to try and achieve those desires. Whereas Louis just needs a match constantly to try and solve problems. And that's all he does. It bothers me. Clearly it bothers me.
As much as we've dissed Louis, right? Mm. I do think, though, that the movie wouldn't work without exactly that Louis.
Oh, no, for sure.
Right? And
sure.
And that's actually the weird and wonderful thing about something like Interview with the Vampire, that even if Louis is annoying, even if Armand Antonio Banderas is weird, they are all essential pieces of this weird story. And if you pull one apart, it's not going to work.
You know what I love and hate, though, is that just because of Louis, it proves that even if you're a vampire, you don't escape human problems. And this is what that movie, because it comes with perks, right? If you're a vampire, it has certain benefits. Like you get to
That's
live.
That's what they put on the clubhouse door. It has perks.
Because you get to live forever.
Sure.
You get to, you
grow
know,
hair.
Grow hair. You don't have to care about like relationships with the humans, quote unquote, that you used to know, blah, 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 all that stuff. This movie gave them all the human problems. Like you have relationship problems. You've got, I don't know, financial stress, you know, after losing your home. And then they have to put up with those problems and be vampires. So you can't live a normal life. You can't grow. You can't do normal human things. Can't see the sun. And you have to kill people to live, which is like, it's the worst. It's not a dark gift. It's just dark.
You know what? You are ready. He picked the wrong interviewer. If he'd picked you, you would just be like, man, this
Don't
sucks.
Don't do it.
I'll write this book.
Don't do it.
Don't worry about it. I'm ready to write this cautionary tale. I got you, Louis. Whereas, you know, in the film, maybe not so much. The other thing I wanted to pick up on, and this builds on the dark, twisty horror stuff that we've been talking about, because alongside these very relatable slash kind of strangely funny characters is that dark story. And a big part of what supports the horror is also the sexuality of the movie, which I think is very important to talk about, because we've talked about this before in the context of throwbacks in particular. I can't say the actual word I mean on air, but I think that they don't make movies that are this lusty anymore. There's a degree of sensuality and desire and all of it, you know. I felt uncomfortable as a child. I just thought that was me as a child. Watching it as an adult, I recognize how purposeful that kind of insertion of content is into the film. And I don't think we make movies like this anymore. Again, you know, now movies that try to talk about sex or sexuality are very explicit. This movie actually isn't all that explicit. It's just incredibly lustful.
So I never realized how much homoeroticism was in this film. And watching it this time was when it became clear to me. And you're right that it's all of that, right? Vampires are fascinating and interesting and have this huge following precisely because there's an element of sexuality and sensuality and the forbidden that comes along with it. And a lot of movies, I think, have killed that off, staked it through the heart. If you think of something like Dracula, the new one, Dracula Untold, what's sexy about that, right? It's all sort of hordes of creatures that seem to be mindless. They've almost become like zombies.
Zombies.
So when you watch Interview with the Vampire, you realize the appeal. You remember that this is supposed to be why people give up their humanity to become these creatures. The constant, like, I want to become like you. Why wouldn't I want to become like you? This movie makes a real case for it. And that kind of weird sexuality, the way in which it sort of dances that line between closeness and evil and danger and sex. Like, it's, I don't know, it was really well done.
If you guys could pick one sort of message that the movie is trying to get across, because there are a few, right? Like, obviously, the vampires are proxies for something else. Is it the homosexuality? Is it the case of being the other? Or is it about... I saw this article that says that it's actually about the mundaneness of domestic life, which is kind of true. Like, even if you think about it, they are a family, right? Technically, they want to be a family. Mm. They want to start a family. And then they just go through the motions over, like, you know, centuries after centuries. So if you had to pick, like, one of those things, what would you, as a think piece, what would you say this movie is about?
For me, it's you can't escape yourself. Because the very beginning, I mean, we referenced the fact that Lestat turns Louis, but actually what we didn't say is how much Louis wanted that, right? It was he was looking for an escape from his life, and what he instead got was a continuation of his life forevermore and a lack of evolution, as we've talked about. And so if I think about actually all the characters who make it to the end, then it is that. It is you can try, but you're not going to escape yourself, and being able to be, you know, an immortal creature of the night isn't going to change that.
Wow. I think mine's also kind of dark. I think the message for me, and perhaps this has to do with how old I am now in this phase in life, but I think it's about how at the end, you still need, you still constantly look for someone that might understand you. Whether it's Lestat, who's, you know, he turns Louis not because he's hungry or not because he's got nothing else to do. He's looking for a companion. And this constant search for a companion, the constant search for, you know, immortality is meaningless if it's not to be shared. That, I think, was the message for me, at least.
It's that whole thing against loneliness, right? I love that. I love that about the movie, where they're constantly looking for people to just to hang with, just to talk to, just to make friends, build connections, which is so such a... Because this movie doesn't focus on the human element of the vampire story, which normally always happens in every vampire movie. So they make them contend with their own humanness that's
And actually no one cares about the humans in their life.
No,
like, they're done with.
Yeah, except for themselves. They're constantly trying to, especially Louis, who doesn't want that human being to die inside him, which I thought was, it's a beautiful thing. It's a nice way that the movie handled it over the, very short runtime. 1 hour, 50-ish minutes, 2 hours at most.
And yet it managed to have very, very languid scenes about that runtime. It's interesting because it spans a number of centuries, actually, but the scenes themselves don't move quickly at all. Even the action scenes, quote unquote, are rather slow and lingering, and they're long takes. And I think all of it contributes to that sense that you have of time passing and taking its time to pass.
I just wanted to say, and Arvin, you touched on this earlier, and it does all of that in such a beautiful package. It's actually a really well-shot film. The scenes of New Orleans as time moves by, the way they're dressed, the way everything is framed. It's just really beautiful to spend time in this space.
We've been talking today about Interview with the Vampire from 1994, directed by Neil Jordan, starring Brad Pitt, Tom Cruise, Kirsten Dunst. And it's based, of course, on Anne Rice's novel. We'd like to hear from you. Have you watched it? Have you watched it recently? Tell us what you think. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.